What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Never say ashes. That was the first thing Mr. King taught me. Cremated remains, he would say, followed by, "What did I just say, RJ?" Cremated remains, I told him, nervously, more of question than an answer. Repetition, it's how we learn, he said as he closed his book and stood up. I'm not impervious to errors. If I mess up, I'll be the first to admit it. The creak of his ancient chair matching the creak in his ancient back. Mr. King had blinding white hair, dipped from Arctic snow. It complemented his black suit impeccably, contrasting colors meeting in the middle. It made my light red hair look like a chemical spill. I even dyed my hair white once on a whim just to see what it would look like. Bad, as I found out. I looked like I had been electrocuted. His office had pictures dating back to 1950. You could watch the advancement of color just by sitting in his guest chair. Mr. King saw me looking at one specific picture. That was Mr. Torrance, the original owner, he would tell me. Very generous, charitable, beloved man about town. I'm sure the Randalls have made offers to his children about selling, dense offers. But they know what their grandfather built. They know how much this place means to the town. Stability. The Randalls make me sick, son, he confided to me. I would never wish harm on someone, especially within my own profession. But the Randalls. I could see the rage as he lightly shook his head. His head would lightly shake a lot. His illness had been ramping up the last year or so, but this specific head shake was pure anger. Flashes of violence spewed across his dimly lit eyes. Finally, he continued, "Chains store death rates, wholesale grief. So many establishments have come and gone since this place opened, but it remains. Because, sadly, death will always be in fashion. Now, let's give you the tour." The red velvet carpeting seamlessly swam through the floor of the funeral home. Mr. King's shoes would glide from room to room. You would never hear him moving throughout the home. They felt tailor-made to ensure zero decibels. Silence, he emphasized. It is imperative for the grieving process. We must create an environment that lets people think about their loss. That's how they come to accept it. You could hear my shoes from a mile away, clicking and clacking as we walked out of his office, through the waiting room and towards the kitchen. The sound of my shoes didn't matter before. If you could even call what I had before shoes, more like dilapidated boots posing as shoes. All I could think about was all of the stores with decent shoes I had walked past just to save a couple extra bucks. I thought about the depressed salesman asking me how they felt. Good, I said. Even though both of my ankles were already sore from my 10-foot walkway testing grounds within the shoe store. $13 for a pair of shoes. What sort of fabric could hold shoes together that cost $13? This is Isabella, our mortician. My heart nearly shot out of my chest. Like that scene in Alien. Like the scene in The Thing. No, Alien. No, I can never choose. Ask me on any given day and I'll give you a different answer, or two different answers. This is what I would tell the friends in my head. Bella is fine, the angelic voice responded. Nice to meet you. She stuck her hand out towards mine as she stood up from the small marble dining table. Her lips glistened as she smiled. Her biochemistry was conceived by the higher powers. The top floor brass had spent all of their resources on creating the perfect specimen known as Bella. Yabella, I said, reaching out only to pause midway and contemplate the word, or, to be more accurate, jumbled catastrophic combination of words I had just sputtered out in front of the most beautiful woman I had ever seen in my life. Did you just say Yabella? Yabella, I did, smiling as the avalanche of sweat began to implode off my forehead. I meant, yes, Bella, nice to meet you as well. The doorbell rang. Normally, the sounds of Mr. King's doorbell was soothing. It sounded oceanic, like a wave crashing down onto the sand, but on this particular instance, it meant Mr. King had to go leave me and Bella alone. I have to go tend to that. Bella, would you mind showing RJ the prep room without me? Of course, she said, as imaginary doves flew behind her. Mr. King held his back as he walked out, and Bella put her long, flowing red hair up into a bun so I could see her cheeks that must have been sculpted by a Greek god. When she smiled, her cheeks got red, perfectly matching her blood-red hair. My light red hair now felt like blood you would spit out into your sink after flossing for the first time in a month. Mr. King said you were an administrator for a couple years before this, at the Gundy home. Yeah. Unfortunately, the Randalls bought the Gundy home, and they bought you out too, she interrupted. So shitty. Her compassion was unmatched. How could someone this beautiful also be this compassionate to a stranger? Did you grow up in Grady? She asked as the oceans parted behind her. No, a couple towns over, I said, now able to form sentences by avoiding eye contact and pretending to look around the kitchen, even though I wanted nothing more than to make eye contact with Bella again. Looking into her eyes was like God showing you the Big Bang. This is how life was created. The voice from the heavens would bellow down to the simpletons. No explanation was needed from God. Just show me a picture of Bella and it all made sense. Do you want to see our prep room? Yes, I said, making eye contact, realizing that for the first time something felt off. I couldn't decipher what it was. This feeling inside of me, this feeling outside of me, both feelings converging together to create what was at this moment just me. This feeling. What the hell was it? And then it hit me. Like the lightning struck down by Zeus when he announced the introduction of Bella to the world. Happiness, I realized. This was the first time I was happy. The body will exhale. I know, I said. I didn't mean to imply. No, not at all. No negative implication. I cut her off. Idiot, I screamed inside my head. Never cut off Bella. You are just an ornament. She is the tree. Okay, cool, she continued. The last apprentice I worked with had no idea the body would exhale when you moved it. And then when he heard it for the first time, he screamed and thought it was a demon. Never saw him again. Actually, I can't even remember his name. Her compassion was blinding. She was troubled that she couldn't remember the name to this colossal moron who didn't know that dead bodies did exhale sometimes when you move them. This man was not a man. He was an ant. Now ants have strength. This man was an eel, swimming through the beautiful oceans, just causing mayhem and harm. If I ever saw this eel. Would you mind helping me slide this body down a little? Just so the forehead isn't so close to the edge of the prep bed? Is that okay? I would burn Rome to the ground if she asked me to. Yes, of course, I responded. On three, Yabella? We locked eyes as she smiled while making fun of me. Technically, we only locked eyes for half a second, but within that half of a second, I felt like I was lying in my bed listening to the sounds of rain tap against my tiny window. That soothing feeling of comfort. One, two, three, slide. Our chemistry was perfect. Not everyone knows what one, two, three means. Some think it means go on three, others think it means go on four. Me and Bella both knew to go on 3.5. What more proof of us being soulmates was needed? We could call the local chapel with verifiable proof that a wedding was imminent. His name was Richard Rothman, she said, peeking at his chart. Sounds of zipping magnetized my eyeline, following the zipper from bottom to top until Bella revealed it. The body. The cold, white, dead body. It looked like a raisin that had been left in the sun for a month. His skin sagged, nearly draping off the prep table. 4 thin white strands of hair delicately hung on top of his moleskin head. Deep purple lips, dark brown blotches next to his right eye and bottom left under his lip. His teeth were tiny, like Tic Tacs. Age 92, heat stroke. Sounds like a nice guy, Bella added. Kind of looks like my grandfather. He would soon become an elevated prop used for catharsis to the people who had once loved and cared for him. Can you hand me the number 9 scalpel? Bella asked delicately. They're labeled. Great, I emphasized, ensuring Bella that her decision to label the scalpels should be taught at MIT along with the work of Oppenheimer. The truth is, I knew what scalpel she needed in this moment. I could have picked it out of a haystack while blindfolded. But I remember what Mr. Gundy told me the night he let me try the Macallan 18 bottle he had been saving for a special occasion. Smart people want to feel smart. Even if you know the answer, sometimes it's best to let them think they're teaching you something. I never forgot that. I never forgot anything Mr. Gundy had taught me. My precision of navigation through the human mind was owed to Mr. Gundy. I backed towards Bella, holding it safe side up, extending it out towards her. Our bodies had never been this close before. Thank you, she said, like a hummingbird on a summer morning. I've never heard a hummingbird, but it's safe to assume that they sound like Bella when she's just been given the scalpel she's asked for. She reached out with her left hand. I had never seen her left hand before. In that instance, I knew why. The ring. She had a ring on her finger. Of course, I thought. How stupid of me to contemplate the notion that this specimen of perfection was unattached. How could I be so naive? I was no longer a man. I was an eel swimming through the bottom of the dark ocean. Incision on the clavicle, Isabella instructed out loud, as she reached up with the scalpel extended towards the body, digging its way inside. Aneurysm hook? She asked. Before she could even turn, I had extended it towards her. Not your first rodeo, Isabella suggested, happily, even smiling. Rodeo? I asked. Figure of speech. Just means you've seen this before. Oh, right, I muttered. My brain now on autopilot as my barely beating black heart thought about the man who put that ring onto Bella's finger. Looking for the carotid artery and jugular vein, you can sit down if you want, she added, motioning to the chair. I'm fine, thank you, debating between drowning or burning alive. Putting incision on artery, sticking cannula pump into the artery, make an incision on the vein, I said, out loud apparently. Very good, Isabella encouraged. Want to take over? She joked, smiling, her lips glistening again, brighter than ever. The lips that belonged to another man. There was a man who owned those lips, those beautiful red. Don't stop now, she said encouragingly. Blood is then pushed out of the incision. Pink indicates where the fluid goes. Dead blood is then pushed out. Check tips of the hands for distribution. Every extremity must have distribution. Take a spear, trocar 2 inches right of the navel, pierce it upwards towards the heart. The words had lost all meaning at this point. I'd seen this done so many times, I could have recited the instructions in Latin. Are you sure you want to be a director and not a mortician? Bella said, smiling as whatever was left of my soul could now be bought off Amazon Prime for $13. Bella kept digging until she announced with some interest, body is a little clotty. We need to go through each limb. You're not scared of blood, are you? Isabella extended her scalpel invitingly. Didn't think so, she said, her perfect smile revealing her perfect teeth as her perfect face turned back to continue her perfect embalm. I took out my tiny black operating gloves. We would tell our grandkids about this. Grandpa and Grandma fell in love while vacuuming the fluid out of Dick Rothman's chest.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Rim job! Rim job! Rim job!
The taunts echoed from behind me as the voices swarmed closer towards. Trying to shut them out with my cheap headphone, turning up the music.
Hey, rim job, where are you going, pal?
Jeff Malone said, aggressively tapping me from behind around the neck. I'm going home, Jeff, I said, nervous.
Already? It's not even dinner time, rim job. Why are you going home so quick?
Jeff Malone tightened his grip around my neck as his two cohorts, Jay and Chuck, followed closely behind while eating Swedish fish. That's not my name, Jeff. What?
Rim job? Of course that's your name. You hear that? My friend over here forgot his own name. It's not good, rim job, forgetting your own name. Luckily, you got friends like me to help you remember. You should be grateful, rim job.
Please let me go, Jeff.
Yeah, I'll let you go. I just want to show you something first.
Jeff Malone said, twisting my body into his approved direction down the nearby alley as we stopped halfway through.
Rim job, I want you to meet Shit Pants.
A body. A homeless body. Laying down on the hard ground next to a dumpster, his face was riddled with burnt acne scars. Dried up nosebleeds stained his upper lip. His bare feet. Is he okay? I asked.
Yeah, rim job, he's great.
No retard, he's homeless and he smells like shit. Smell him. Jeff Malone began shoving my face towards the motionless homeless man. Stop, Jeff, please, I pleaded.
Come on, rim job, you're always playing with dead things in the woods, you little freak.
No, Jeff, please, I pleaded, desperately hoping someone would hear me.
You know you want it, rim job, that smell, that sweet, sweet smell of shit. Ah!
Roared the homeless man. We all fell backwards as the homeless man's face opened wide, clutching his chest, convulsing on the ground.
Help!
The homeless man reached out with rapidly shaking hands as his feet kicked behind him.
Run!
Jeff Malone yelled as he and his two cohorts ran as fast as they could down the alley back out onto the main town road. I didn't move. I couldn't move. I just sat there, staring at the man, or what was left of this man.
Hey!
I turned, alarmed at whoever was bellowing towards him with that booming, threatening tone.
The hell you doing, kid?
It was Mr. Castillo, the mean deli owner, walking over with his stained apron holding a huge garbage bag that dripped from the bottom, leaving a light brown trail.
Playing in the trash? This is private property, you know?
I quiveringly responded with, Mr. Castillo, he needs... Mr. Castillo stopped seeing what I saw.
Son of a bitch, I need this today like a shot in the ass. Move it, moron! Get out of here! Come on, you beatnik, chicken shit hobo freak!
Shouldn't we call an ambulance?
For what, kid? He's an addict. They scoop him up. In a week, he'll be right back here.
Mr. Castillo tossed the garbage into the dumpster and then turned towards the homeless man, his rage doubling down.
Hey! Shit for brains! Hey!
Mr. Castillo yelled as he kicked the man's knee.
I said scram! You got 5 seconds till I call the cops. You hear me, shithead?
But he can't move, I said.
He can move. Trust me, kid. If we're not so crank, he'd run like Jesse Owens. Move!
Mr. Castillo roared as he kicked the homeless man again in the knee. The homeless man clutched his chest and began to crawl down the alley, stopping after about 10 feet of a panicked crawl.
Hobo Joe, you got to the count of go screw yourself before I call the pigs. One.
Mr. Castillo's roars were interrupted by the slight sound of puking blood.
Oh, come on! I just sprayed back there!
The homeless man began convulsing again, but more violently, as his body was being ripped apart from every direction by bodybuilders. You gotta call an ambulance, Mr. Castillo. Mr. Castillo dismissively turned to go to the back entrance of his deli. Aren't you gonna help him? I asked, desperate. I am, kid. Oh! And I catch you playing back here again? I'm gonna feed you to my dogs. I moved in closer. Mister? He wasn't moving. He wasn't breathing. He lay there in a pool of his own blood and puke and what little life had remained within this man. How long had he lived back there, I wondered. Lived seemed to be a generous description to describe his life. I stared at the body, completely still, looking at the cold, pale eyes of this stranger. The body remained motionless. All those times I had walked past a homeless person near the bus stop or the post office or the construction site, wondering to myself if they were asleep or something worse. They had never seemed human from afar, more like props in a movie, staging to make this town seem interesting, which it never was, not to me. This whole town felt dead to me, like this man. But up close, this man felt human. I wondered what brought him here, all the misfortune that had led to this moment. Had I seen this man before? I couldn't remember. His pockets strewn open with big holes. Did he even have identification? Would anyone know who this man was? Like the other person that Daddy and his friends talked about that time they were drinking on the porch late at night. I remember listening to their whole conversation through my wall. About that van in the woods. Cops found it next to the creek filled with four dead homeless people. He couldn't remember how they died. It was an overdose of something, started with an F, I think. The word was too long for a little kid to remember. The cops called the place that Daddy had worked at and asked him to come down and impound the vehicle, but Daddy never got it impounded. Instead, they cleaned it, gutted it, and turned it into their own vehicular version of a treehouse stationed behind the auto body shop. A place they could drink cheap beer after a long day at work and nobody would ever complain about the noise. I remembered reading the newspaper the next day, and the day after, and the day after. I wanted to know more about those dead people. Who were they? How had they died? But there was nothing, not even in the obituaries. It was as if it had never happened. It was as if they had never happened. Daddy and his friends said the mayor asked the cops not to say anything because he was running for re-election. Sweep it under the rug, Daddy's friends, who was a cop, told him. Daddy had lots of cop friends. People walked past the alleyway completely unaware of what had just transpired a mere 50 feet from their own daily routines. Minutes turned to hours. The beaming sun turned to sleepy night. The body never moved. Neither did I. The wrench snapped in half. How cheap does your wrench have to be for it to snap in half? Only Buff's auto body would have his mechanics use wrenches that cheap, thought Curtis. He slid from under the 1995 BMW 7 Series 740i RWD and reached back into his nearby toolkit to see if, by the grace of God, maybe there was an extra. Of course not, he thought. Cheap people never have extras. That's what makes them cheap, he said to himself.
Curtis!
Yelled a voice from nearby in a thick Jamaican accent.
What?
It's your son's school.
God damn it. Pinching his spine as he stood up in his dirty Buff's auto body attire covered in grease and dirt matching his peppered hair and mustache. He knew what this meant. This is not his first rodeo, as the heavenly Bella might say. The cheap screen door swung open, followed by a simultaneous scream of,
RJ!
Curtis stormed through the house. It didn't take long to storm through this house. It was small and cluttered. Things were routinely left out for days. Bowls, beer cans, dishes, old receipts. I would try to clean while Curtis slept. Curtis would get mad sometimes when he saw me cleaning. He would call me names. Bad names. Men shouldn't be good at cleaning. That's a woman's thing, Curtis would say. RJ! Get out here, boy! Bellowed Curtis as he slammed open my bedroom door. The room was empty and spotless. My tiny Ninja Turtle bed covers were tucked in. You would never have known someone had used this room within the past couple hours. All of my notebooks were positioned on top of each other by size, drawings, comic book style, perfectly positioned into four different quadrants on the pages. Even my tiny desk had been recently polished with my own homemade Clorox concoction. This was the icing on Curtis's shit Sunday. His little queer son, he thought.
RJ?
It was quick, but he saw something. Through my tiny bedroom window, looking out towards the patch of grass leading out into the woods, it was a man-made path. Curtis continued down this path, wondering who had made this. This was private property. Wood chips? Curtis wondered. This wasn't just moving leaves. Someone, not his own son, he hoped, had made a sophisticated, elegant walking path at least 100 feet in length into the woods, right into the... Curtis stopped.
Hey! This is private property! Hey! You hear me? I said you're on my private property, pal!
The man, sitting upright in a stool against the tree, did not move. The low-pulled Colorado Rockies hat and cheap aviator sunglasses covered most of his face. The nerve of this man to sit there pretending not to hear me, Curtis yelled inside his head. Quite a setup this son of a bitch had made for himself on land not belonging to him. There was a tarp tied together between two trees, creating a very quaint little nook, especially on a beautiful spring day such as today. If Curtis wasn't boiling with rage, he would have been jealous he had never concocted something like this for himself. I'm giving you to the count of three. One, two. Curtis stormed over towards the man and grabbed his shoulder, turning him. Don't make me have to... The body slid off the chair and dropped like a stone through water. Curtis took a big step back. The man was dead. Sunglasses slipped off his face to reveal the pale white eyes staring up at Curtis. That jacket, Curtis thought. He had the same jacket. That hat? Curtis had that same hat. This son of a bitch had robbed him, he thought. I'll be damned, Curtis thought, shaking his head, leaning in closer. The pants, the shoes. This no good hobo had damn near stolen an entire outfit from his house and then set up shop 100 feet away without him ever knowing. How the hell did he never... Dad? Curtis turned, clutching his chest.
Jesus Christ, RJ. You'll give me a heart attack. Don't come any closer now. Who knows what kind of diseases this turd has on it? I need you to go back into the house and call the police.
I stood there, shaking, holding a book. A big book. My tiny hand covered most of the title, and Curtis's blinding rage couldn't allow him to actually see what the book was.
You heard me, boy, Curtis demanded. Call the police.
Why, Daddy?
Why? What do you mean? Why? Look, son.
He's dead.
Exactly. Now go back in there, call the police, tell them we got a dead hobo on our property.
But he's not hurting anybody, Daddy.
Hurting anybody? You got tuna for brains, boy? Get your school-skipping ass back into that house before I make you look like him. You understand me, boy?
But he's my friend, Dad.
Friend? RJ, this man ain't no friend. He's dead, son. Can't you...
Curtis stopped himself. He knew. He wanted to lie to himself, fool himself, even for a couple seconds, but he couldn't. It was plain as day. His son. His son had made this. All of this. RJ, who is that man? Don't be mad, Dad. Son, who is he? I knew you would be mad. That's why I didn't tell you, Dad. I'm sorry. I'll make it look like how it used to look. Just please don't be...
Boy, you tell me right now, who is that man?
I...
Speak, RJ, before I...
Curtis went for his belt and began to take it off, biting his lip.
I named him Reggie.
You... And then it happened. Years of repressed rage and anger came crashing down onto Curtis like a tsunami. The incredible sadness of his child, his only child, had led to this moment. What kind of a kid is so sad that he would resort to this? Curtis let go of his belt. His breathing became slow and steady. He's not bothering anybody, Daddy. Can I keep him? Please?
RJ, Curtis mustered out loud, fighting back the emotion spewing from his watered eyes. What is wrong with you, boy?
Curtis wanted to know. More than anything in this world, he wanted to know what was wrong with this boy, his boy. I stood there motionless. My eyes began to flutter, and I became lightheaded. When I was finally able to open my mouth and try speaking, my book hit the dirt. I reached down to quickly grab it and brush off the dirt, unable to hold back the tears of what this moment, this revelation. Curtis turned to look back at the body. Less about morbid fascination and more about not having to look at this person who up until a minute ago had been his son, his boy, his little boy. Curtis walked over and he knelt near the dead body. Through the light tear dribbling down his cheek over his peppered mustache, he noticed something about the body. His face. His face had makeup on it. He didn't look dead, Curtis thought. He looked alive.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
We once used half a broomstick to fasten a decapitated head onto a torso.
Oh my God, Bella said, covering her mouth as she lightly lifted her cocktail towards her glistening lips that for the time being belonged to this eel of a man better known as Satan and reincarnate.
Sometimes you just have to be creative, I said, sipping my Diet Coke.
How did he become decapitated? She asked, her speech slightly slurred.
Drunk driving, I answered, lightly shaking my head, not oblivious to the awkwardness of revealing this answer as beautiful Bella sipped her cocktail. The car hit a tree and the backwoods around town, if you're not careful. I tried to avoid grisly details to Bella, even though I could recount every detail of the crime scene. The victim's age, blood type, blood alcohol level, clothing, car make and model, amount of gas left in the tank. I knew it all, but that wasn't for Bella. Bella was pure. She didn't need that.
Ooh, Bella said, lightly pushing her drink away with the precise comedic timing of a young Chevy Chase.
Fletch, I thought. Now Vacation. The first one. Best movie was always a big debate between me and the friends inside my mind.
Bella laughed as she brought the drink back closer and reassured me. You hear all these stories around town as a kid, people driving, and then... It scared me straight, she said, laughing. I shouldn't laugh. That's awful. I'm sorry.
It's okay, I said sincerely. Bella was incapable of doing something wrong, except for marrying the eel. Apparently, this guy drifted off to the side of the road and then went straight into a tree. Autopsy revealed the high blood alcohol level. It actually happened not too far away from my friend's house.
Wow, Bella said, hanging on to every word as if I was John F. Kennedy in 1962.
I learned a lot from Mr. Gundy, I told her.
Clearly, she told me as the sexual tension filled this little dive bar littered with Colorado Rockies memorabilia.
Hey, Bells!
A slurred speech spoke out.
Hi, Jeff, a stone-faced Bella said, avoiding eye contact.
What are you up to?
This slurred speech demon asked not so inquisitively while interrupting my vocabulary foreplay. Nothing, Jeff. Just hanging with my friend. Hi, friend. He aggressively tapped me on the shoulder. I wanted it not to be true. But this slurred speech man making the beautiful Bella uncomfortable was Jeff Malone. His bright orange Denver Broncos trucker hat, his go big or go home sleeveless shirt, his tattoos of confusing Mayan symbols on both sunburnt arms, his protruding beer belly tipping my chair up. Name's Jeff, he said, his face close to mine. He didn't remember. Thank God, I thought. Passing through life as a ghost has its benefits after all. Meant not being remembered by the people who tortured you. Nice to meet you, Jeff. My name is... Calling on audible, I thought of the first name that came to my mind. Gerald. Hey, Jeff and Jerry. Pals at last. So... Bells, what you doing after this? My fiance is picking me up, she answered, still avoiding eye contact. Fiance. The eel was not her husband, it was her fiance. They were not man and wife, they were beautiful Bella and eel. Ah, come on, why you gotta be like that? You know why you're not married yet? It's because you miss me. It's cool, just say it. Gary knows it, right, Gary? Not only did he not remember me, he couldn't even remember my fake name from 10 seconds ago. Jeff, do you mind? I'm just trying to hang out with my friend, she said, never able to shy away from a semblance of compassion. Jeff smiled, cheap cigarette-smoking teeth unhinged from his tar-soaked mouth. His breath smelled like an orgy of regret. Don't let me interrupt. You know where to find me, Bells. Jeff sipped his Coors Light as he walked away, swaying towards the corner of the bar. Sorry about that, Bella said, playing the role of protector. He's been kicked out of most bars around town. Apparently not this one. Yet, she reassured me. It's fine, I said, smiling, shaking my head, sipping my Diet Coke. The rush of Bella, Jeff Malone, and unhealthy caffeine creating a whirlwind of anxiety from my gut up to my rapidly beating heart. Can we get the check? I'll pay for this, I said, setting down a $20 bill onto the bar. No, Bella playfully demanded. The tradition is taking out the new guy for a drink. We can't break tradition, RJ. Okay, if you insist. Rich job! The world had just ended. I knew it! Jeff Malone jogged back up behind me. Rim job as I live and breathe. Holy shit, I'll be goddamned. Jeff Malone aggressively grabbed the back of my neck. You two know? Shit, yeah, Bells. We went to middle school together. Ain't that right, Rim Job? We go way back. Damn, Rim Job. We all figured you'd be locked up by this point. Playing with dead squirrels and shit out by the ravine. Sick little freak. Jeff added, sipping his Coors as my heart slipped out of my chest, down my pants, and onto the unkempt dive bar floor. Don't be mean, Jeff, Bella said, trying to protect what was once the love of her life, but has now been reduced to a worm swimming in the mud as his childhood bully continued his reign of cataclysmic emasculation. I'm just messing with him, Bells. That's what friends do. Ain't that right, Rib Job? I'm going to the bathroom. I stood up, feeling his clenched claw still on my neck. Don't forget to wipe, Rim Job, Jeff said loud enough for everyone to hear. Can't believe you're friends with that freak, Jeff said to Bella as I walked away, impressed that I was able to walk considering my legs were now made of jelly. I opened the door and puked into the sink. Damn, man, an elderly man said next to me while washing his hands. Draped in Colorado Rockies gear, the elderly man sidestepped my puke and headed out the door. Nance, we got a puker, I heard the old man say, followed by an emphatic, demonic laugh by Jeff. I closed my eyes, trying to fool myself that this was actually a nightmare. But there was no time to be naive. I knew I had to crawl out of this tiny bathroom window. The screen lifted inward, which meant I had to snap it off. Normally, this might prove difficult, but within situations of extreme embarrassment and rage, the body is capable of immense strength. The window ripped off the rotating handle instantly. I pushed through the tiny screen and then Winnie the Pooh'd by. I hit the ground awkwardly. My left shoulder caught the brunt of the fall, and I knew right away I had probably dislocated it. I picked up the window handle and threw it as far as I could over the parking lot fence with my one good arm wincing. You have no idea what your body is capable of until you stretch it to its limit. I took no more than 5 steps down the alleyway before I turned and positioned my left shoulder towards the bar wall on 3. Well, 3.5 as Bella instinctively knew. 1, 2. My shoulder was back in its rightful place of being a shoulder and not dangling loose bone. I sprinted through the alleyway and onto the main town road, sticking to the side, avoiding all streetlights. What would I tell Bella? I had gotten sick. The bartender would no doubt walk into the bar, see the smashed window, and alert the authorities. There was no story, no fable I could tell, no yarn to spin about what had happened. My cowardly past had become my cowardly present, and now I was going to have to replace this window and attend a court hearing for destruction of private property. Or I could leave. I've left towns before. This would be nothing new, starting over. Adaptation, that's growth. We all do it. No, that wasn't enough. It would catch up to me. I would have to go farther this time. A new state. That's how far I would have to go. But I wouldn't be able to become a funeral director without formal education. There was a loophole within the Colorado system that allowed you to move up the ranks without formal education. It's why this was my destiny, out of all 50 states, to be born into the one that embraced my brilliance? Coincidence? Impossible. The speeding car moved past me, swerving slightly back onto the correct side. I must have walked 5 miles at this point. Time flies when you're contemplating a new existence. I briefly looked up at the car, positive that I had not been detected, and then continued to contemplate my options. The sound of shattered glass echoed down the dark winding roads. I stopped in my tracks. The car had veered off the road and hit a tree. My God, I thought, what if it was Bella? I couldn't see the car, but what if... No, I thought. I ran. I ran faster than I ever had before. My feet nearly burst through my cheap shoes until I took them off mid-sprint and tossed them out into the empty field. Guided by the headlights, I ran to the next car and looked inside, terrified at the mere thought that Bella could be inside and that she would... It wasn't Bella. A typhoon of calm washed over me, relieved that my bride, Bella, was nowhere to be seen. The only person in that car was a man at the wheel, his face smashed in against the steering wheel. I couldn't see anything else. All I could see was his hat, his bright orange Denver Broncos trucker hat. It was dangling off of his head. I took out my tiny black operating gloves and lifted his head. Jeff Malone's head.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
His face had been smashed, impaled is a better word, as if someone had pushed his whole face inward, so it was now pushing out the back of his skull.
Help me.
Blood spewing out of his nose, mouth, and ears. I turned Jeff's mutated face, aiming his eyes directly into mine. What is my name, Jeff? Jeff's bloodshot eyes were closing in and out, his left eye bigger than his right.
Please help.
What is my name? Jeff struggled to form the word. I smiled, never losing eye contact. Not even when I took out the number 9 scalpel and made the first incision at the bottom of his neck. His eyes widened, both of them briefly the same size again. He coughed up blood onto my black operating gloves. "Don't move," I demanded. "Moving makes it messy," still looking into his fading brown eyes. My incision ran clear across the bottom of his whole neck. He reached up with his dislocated right arm as blood spilled out in a perfect red wave onto his go big or go home sleeveless t-shirt. The key to a clean incision is to be sharp, precise, and measured, which in this moment meant to keep a consistent, rapid pace. Otherwise, the head doesn't come off cleanly. This happened when Jeff's friend, Jay, tried to escape out of his car in the parking lot. That was a messy one. Not my finest work. It was such a pain. I had to drive the car all the way to the outside of town by Glenville Creek because I knew that was the only place that would match the impact of how his body would look decapitated. Those trees are thick. They could knock your head clean off. Whatever he had left in his tank floundered as I reached back inside the car window and finished my work. Luckily, the impact of his accident had done some of it for me. Cutting through his trachea was a breeze, which is not always the case. With Jay, for instance, I had to use a saw, which was not a clean cut, more of a shredder than a chopping board. Jeff was easy. Too easy, I thought. I wish it had taken more time, more effort, more cutting, but you can't always get what you want. Life can be cruel, I thought. So I sucked it up, knowing that wasting time would just create more time on the back end to make it look authentic. I cut through the first rib of his neck. I started to reach inside for his head, but then stopped myself. Why bother? Sure, I could make it look clean like I did with Jay or his friend, Chuck. Chuck made me chuckle. Chuck never drank and drove. His father was a cop. I had to spike his drink at the bar and then follow him on my bike. His car flipped over after hitting the guardrail and then landed upside down under the bridge. Chuck's head was like a squished tomato. I remember his dad puked at the crime scene. I remember how many people showed up for Chuck's funeral. All those cops. They had no idea, priding themselves on their homicide skills, wearing their shiny little badges with honor. Not one of them had any idea what happened to Chuck. What had really happened? The procession, the massive procession. Nobody had a clue, but Jeff. He had done this on his own. I laughed. How could I not? The irony. You have to admire the irony of life. I could just leave Jeff as he was, decapitated, drenched in blood, his pants filled with shit. Jeff was perfect. Jeff Malone was my best work yet. Better than Jay, Chuck, Reggie, Mr. Castillo, Daddy. My work here was done. I had more pressing matters at hand. I had to take care of that eel, Bella's fiance. Oh, and the Randalls. Can't forget about the Randalls, those leeches. And the bartender. She knew my face. Man, I thought, it's going to be a fun summer.
Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.